Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
Sad we didn't get to go to our Edgar Allan Poe thing.
Yeah.
Thanks to this winter storm that we're having.
Yeah. They sure hyped it up, didn't they?
They really hyped it up. I was kind of disappointed when I looked out the window and that was it. Just a little bit of a sheet of ice.
Yeah.
It's crazy though. And I know this happens all the time, but like where we're at, I don't think we got it as bad as literally just 10 minutes down the road.
Mm-hmm.
They're having like actual snow, ice. Because in Texas, we don't get snow. We get ice.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different. Still cold.
I think it's colder. I remember when I was a kid in Oklahoma, it would snow occasionally. And it always seemed like it was warm. Or warm-ish compared to this.
Or you were just a kid and it didn't bother you like it does.
Maybe.
You're an old man now. It bothers you differently.
Maybe.
It's a little different. So as you can see, Tori's not with us. What you don't know, or what you will know now, she is here, laying on her couch, taking a nap. I woke her up and said, hey, come on, let's go record. And she's like, nah, I'm good, bruh. I'm like, come on. It's cold in here. We don't do well in the cold. I even have a space heater going over there to try to warm it up a little bit, but it's cold in here.
That is not a space heater.
It's a tiny one.
That's a micro heater.
Look, it warms me up in my office, and I thought it'd be okay for in here. Just to knock the edge off. It's warmer than it was in here.
There's absolutely no way that's working.
Why are you judging the size of my heater?
I've built Lego houses bigger than that.
Okay. Thing. Okay. That's not nice. Very rude. Very rude. So, yeah, she's not with us. I don't really have a whole lot. Last week, we kind of had to, I hate to say it, we kind of had to rush through because I had to have May at practice. And this was kind of a longer story. I was not expecting it to be as long as it was. So we didn't really do any business. Not that we have a lot. We got a third microphone. So when Tori decides to interrupt her nap, maybe she'll join us and have her own mic this time. So you'll be able to hear her better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on the next story because we're going out of town next weekend. So we've got to get it recorded and edited and posted. That way we can go enjoy a fun weekend with some friends. You look so enthused.
You know me.
I'm excited. He's excited. You can't tell, but he's so excited on the inside. Now we're going to go to Broken Bow for the weekend, get a cabin with some friends, hang out, have a little adult getaway, no kids. It's been a long time since we've done that together.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time that you and I went on anything, like, well, no, we had the kids. I was going to say it was the sibling trip, but we had the kids. I don't know if we've ever taken an adult vacation with friends without our kids.
Yeah, we did.
We did?
Yeah, we went to the river with Cameron Randall
that time. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was the last time. So mm-hmm. It's literally been like 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun. Enjoyable. I'm excited.
Are you?
I am. I'm over this guy. He's lucky he's bringing the firewood in. Otherwise, I might kick them to the curb.
It's cold.
It is cold. I'm so glad you're bringing the firewood in and I don't have to.
I'm just glad I decided to get that tarp and bring some over here.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having to walk all the way out there and do it?
I wouldn't. We would just freeze.
Yeah.
It'd be a cold couple of days. Kids are out of school Monday and Tuesday. They just made that announcement not too long ago. So they're out for the next 2 days. I will probably have to go to work. As long as we have electricity, we'll see how that goes. If the guys don't, then they probably won't make me, but we'll see how it goes. I'm all for staying home.
What if you slip and fall and hurt yourself?
That is very true. So I told Tori, I said, what if I just text my manager and be like, the roads are too bad. I can't make it in. So, yeah. We'll see if I have to work tomorrow. You're off tomorrow.
Kind of. Yeah, I'll have to get on my computer and do some stuff.
Gotcha.
Training videos and whatnot.
Yep. So we're surviving this 2026 Icemageddon. There's it's going to be as bad as 2021 and stock up. And everybody was going crazy, buying everything off the shelves. And the gas pumps were either out of gas or had these long lines to get them. I mean, everybody was in a panic down here. And I know our friends up north are like, oh, those Texans don't know how to deal with it. It's not necessarily that we don't know how to deal with it. We're not equipped to deal with it. We don't have the pipes buried very far because mm-hmm. it's Texas. It doesn't freeze very often. So anytime it does, you run out of water. And our electrical system, I don't even know all the ins and outs, but it's not equipped to deal with. What was that?
I don't know. Door slamming, I'm guessing.
Maybe. I was thinking it was ice, like a tree falling or something.
Maybe.
But yeah, we're just, our houses aren't insulated like they are up north. And a lot of us don't have the winter clothes like they do. And we have no machinery to clear the roads like they do. And it's mm-hmm. just, it's a whole nother ball game being snowed in here and people are crazy and they just start panic buying. I'm not gonna lie, I did a big Sam's order because I was not getting stuck in this house without Dr. Pepper and some snacks.
Yeah, and then you bought that big case of Dr. Pepper
on Tuesday,
and then literally 2 days later there were four left
gone. Tamara and I joked and said, I said I was gonna ration it, I was gonna put it in our room and tell the kids, like, you can have one a day and give them one can, and they have to exchange their can to get a new one. I should have done it.
Yeah, you should have, because they all told me, oh, I only had one a day, Dad.
I literally had two out of there. I had one at work and one night with dinner.
I had zero.
Kids. Just must square up one good time with them.
Luckily, the dollar store had a sale.
Yep. Do you stocked us up? We're good. We got Dr. Pepper.
Maybe. I haven't looked.
I haven't either. So we may be lying. You may have to brave the ice roads and go get it. We did for Snowmageddon. We did not prepare like we did this time. And we were stuck in the house in 2021. One, Jackson was only...
He wasn't very old.
No, he was born 2015, so mm-hmm. 6 years old, maybe?
Six, seven.
I don't even think he was that old.
No, I don't remember. Maybe five, six.
We did not prepare like we did this time, so we had no Dr. Pepper. We had snacks and stuff, but it got a lot colder. The roads were much worse.
And for way longer.
Yeah, and like we would have rolling blackouts or whatever you call it. But mm-hmm. when I say that, I use that term very loosely, because the electricity would come on literally for 2 minutes, just long enough for everybody to get excited. We'd go plug our phones in or do whatever we needed to with electricity, and it would be on for 2 minutes and then turn off for like 3-4 hours. We would have no electricity. And that to me is more aggravating than just without.
It was like being tortured.
Yeah. And because we have kids, as soon as the electricity would go off, you know, nobody would turn off lights or the TV or whatever. So every time it came back on, it was like every light in the house is on and there's like noise everywhere. And so it was like jarring every time it would come on.
Mm-hmm.
So knock on wood, so far we're good. We haven't lost electricity yet. I think the worst is over now.
It's supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
But they've been changing the weather every single day.
Yeah. Yep. Tori and AD came and stayed the night just in case if they lost electricity, because they don't have a fireplace. We do. So mm-hmm. at least they'd be warm. So, yeah.
I went ahead and cooked a whole bunch of stuff last night.
Yep. Cooked a bunch of food. It was good. Ribs were good.
Yep.
Yep.
Got that pulled pork going now.
Yep. You need to do like a cooking channel. You really do.
No.
You do.
I'm not organized enough to do something like that.
You need to. His cooking, guys, is phenomenal. Like, when our friends want food, they call him to cook it, smoke it. It's so good. He's catered a friend's wedding before. Almost lit our house on fire.
Yeah, I'll never do that again. That was so much.
Not only was he catering it, but he was also in the wedding.
Yeah.
So it was a lot. But he pulled it off, and it was good. It was really good. So.
Yeah. Even though, like you said, I almost caught the house on fire.
Yeah, that was scary. So that's all I've got, really. Nothing else. You got anything to add? Any true crime news? Ghostly news?
No, not off the top of my head.
Nothing.
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 I'm
nothing
not prepared.
There. You're never prepared. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and get into part two of our story. So last week I mentioned, you know, I was looking for a one-off documentary for a short little episode, and then here we are on part two, and we'll see how long it records if we have to split it up in three. Oopsies.
Mm-hmm.
It's too good of a story. Like, there are so many victims in this case, and you want to include all of them. And then I've had a recent update, or found a recent update, after I finished watching the documentary, and you kind of want to include everything. You don't want to leave anything out. So we'll see how it goes. So, you ready to find out what happens with Richard Cottingham?
Sure.
All right. Let's get into it.
I went ahead and watched the...
The second one?
No, not the second one, because I want to be surprised.
Oh, okay.
It's like the first one. But I watched the first episode.
Gotcha.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good, isn't it? It's really good. Again, the documentary, I didn't write it on here. I think it's called The Confessions of the Torso Killer on Hulu. Two episodes. I think they're like an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
Definitely worth it. I just can't believe I didn't know about this guy, or he wasn't on my radar with how many victims he has and what they had to go through to get these confessions. I can't believe it's not more known. Yeah. Part of me wonders if it's because a lot of his victims were sex workers, so it's not as
mainstream,
yeah. Which I hate that. They're human. They're people. They're just trying to survive. They do what they have to make ends meet. It doesn't make them any lesser of a person. So why isn't it more mainstream? Why don't more people know about it? It's wild. Makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I guess I'll give a little recap of last week, and then we can pick up where we left off.
Sounds good.
Glad you concur.
Hey, ghostly gang. The case is cold and the vibes are haunted.
We've got murder notes, EMF spikes, and no business being awake this late.
But thanks to W Energy Drink, we have clean energy with no crash, so we can hyperfixate on timelines, suspects, and whether or not the attic is haunted or a squirrel is hiding his nuts.
The flavors are criminally good. Like, we destroyed the evidence good. Not a drop could be found.
It's zero sugar, no artificial colors, and delivers terrifying levels of focus and mental clarity. Perfect for connecting red string and angering spirits.
Hit dubby.gg.com.
Use promo code GGP for 10% off.
Dubby, fueling guilty in the ghostly while the killer's still out there.
And the house is still haunted.
All right, so... In part one, Detective Ancelotti was assigned 12 unsolved murders from the 1960s through the 1980s.
I forgot about these names.
Yeah. There's some good ones. Most of the victims were seen.
Wow.
It's going to be one of those days.
Yep.
Take five. Most of the victims were last seen hitchhiking or picked up by a stranger. they would be found assaulted and murdered in or around Bergen County. In 2004, Ancelotti began looking at Richard Cottingham, known as the Torso Killer. Cottingham was in prison for the assault of Leslie O'Dell and the killing of Dita Gordarzi, Jane Doe, that were both found in a burning hotel room, Valerie Street, found by a maid in that same hotel, and Mary Ann Carr, found outside in the parking lot of that same hotel. So he's in jail for all of those. They also linked him to the murder of Jean-Anne Rayner after finding her necklace in his trophy room. And after 6 years of interviews with Cottingham, Ancelotti got him to confess to the murder of Nancy Vogel in 2010 that he got him to confess to that. Cottingham agreed to a plea deal if they kept everything out of the press. The judge completely berated Cottingham during that trial, and once it ended, Cottingham told Ancelotti that he would never agree to taking a plea deal and solving any more cases. So all of that work Ancelotti did to build that trust with Cottingham went down the drain, and he still had 11 more cases to solve. And that is where we left off. So you remember everything?
I do.
Okay. Good. Great. It's going to be a test after we're done, so be ready. So once they left the trial, they took Cottingham back to an interview room, and they were talking to him, and Cottingham would go on to say that was the worst day of his life that he has had in the last 30 years of sitting in prison, was him being berated by that judge. Ancelotti was like, well, why was it so bad? What do you mean? And Cottingham said it was horrible. I was basically a freak show. I was a freak. And it's like, yeah, you did that. You are a freak show. So he kept saying it will never happen again. He even told Ancelotti, I will outwit you. Like, I'm smarter than you. I will outwit you. He said, I've had 30 years to outwit you. He went on and on about how you could take all the serial killers in the world and not one of them is like him. So again, it's that ego. He just has to inflate that ego about how much better he is at everything and a better serial killer. And that's a weird flex, man. Like, that's weird.
Yeah, it is kind of strange.
Ancelotti decided the best course of action at this point was to put some space between him and Cottingham. He's like, I need to let him stew. I need to quit feeding into his ego. I need to let him sit for a little bit. So he let him sit in prison for a little while, didn't give him any attention, didn't contact him, just let him sit. Well, 3 weeks later, Ancelotti finds out that the media had caught wind of the trial of Nancy Vogel, and a newspaper article is written about it. So all that work that Ancelotti did to keep it out of the media, it goes to the media anyway. So he's like, shit, here we go. He's already ticked off because the judge, you know, made this huge spectacle of it, even though he was specifically asked not to. So not only does he have that to fight against, now he has the media catching wind of this and releasing everything. Cottingham would say that it was hard for him to have 20 people look at him as a murderer, and there's no way he would ever go through that again. And Ancelotti, he's like, that sucks, man. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry. I did what I could. And he really wanted to bring justice to these 11 girls. So he's doing everything he can to try to keep the communication open at this point. He's like, I've let him sit for a little bit. I don't want to give up, but I've got to really think about how I'm going to play my cards now. And not only that, but he also didn't want Cottingham to win. Not only did he want to bring justice to these girls, he felt like by giving up, it's letting this guy win. He's getting what he wants. He's not having to answer for his crimes. He's not having to explain what he did. And he's like, I can't let this guy win. So 5 more weeks go by, and Ancelotti decides to write a letter to Cottingham. In typical Rottingham fashion, he writes back, and he's just going off on Ancelotti. He says, you and your bosses had your day of glory at my expense. Did you really believe I wouldn't learn about my name being splattered all over the media? He would also say, for us to continue will be difficult. First, way will have to be found to guarantee not 90%, not 95%, not even 99%, but 100% that nothing will ever be made public. to the media. Because one of Cottingham's kids found out through the media, and that child wrote him, I think it was his daughter, and she was like, I can't believe you did this to us. You're a horrible human being, and went off on him. So his worst fear happened. His kids found out.
Oh, wow.
It's like, well, you shouldn't have done it. You shouldn't have done it. But with Cottingham saying all this, Ancelotti says there's still a chance. He's saying, I will still do it, but there has to be this. So to him, it's an open door. Like, that's my end right there. Let me poke at that a little bit. That is when Ancelotti decided to try what they call exceptional clearance. Have you ever heard of exceptional clearance before?
I don't know.
So exceptional clearance means a case is considered cleared without an arrest or prosecution because the suspect has been identified with enough evidence to make an arrest, but something outside of their control prevents it. Like the suspect dies before they can prosecute him, or they can't extradite him back to where they need to, or maybe a victim refuses to go on stand or cooperate because they're scared or whatever. Then a lot of times they'll use this to close the case. If they have enough evidence, they have enough witness testimony, they can basically prove it's them without taking them to trial, then they will, and they will consider it the exceptional clearance, basically. They decided that if Cottingham's confession was corroborated by evidence and witness statements, and it seemed credible, then they would go ahead and tell the families of the victims what they were able to find out. They would be able to give these families the answers that what happened to their loved ones and kind of give them closure, I guess, so that they at least know what happened. But they basically would ask the families, like, we can't take this to court, though, because there's these other families that we're trying to get answers for. So we got your answers. Can you please just not tell anybody until we can get answers for everybody else? Most of them agreed. We'll get there, but most of them did agree to it. They understood the bigger picture. It was hard to come to this decision because they felt like the public had the right to know, but this could be the only way for the families to get answers and solve the future cases. But will Cottingham agree? Detective Ancelotti went to Cottingham and explained how it would work. You give us the information to close the cases. We will close the cases. And nothing will be leaked to the press. It's just between us. Cottingham agrees. But he continues to be difficult like he was before. He starts making demands. He wants certain foods while he's in prison. He wants a TV guide subscription. Just basically anything that you normally wouldn't have access or easy access in jail, he was requesting it through the police, saying, you give me this and I'll give you details. They started the old routine of picking him up from Trenton Prison, taking him to Bergen County Jail, sometimes for the night, sometimes for an entire weekend. The detective found a partner that he would work with during these interviews, and his name was Sergeant James McMorrow. And between the two of them, they got to work. Like, they did a really good job of one would push until they could kind of see that he was closing off, basically, because he would throw a tantrum like a child, and then the other one would swoop in and kind of derail it and kind of talk him down or whatever, and then get him to where he would open up again. And it was this constant routine, constant circle that they were doing. They would use any and all time that they had with Cottingham, including the car rides from Trenton to the county jail. They would just, like, kind of talk to him like a person, try to get him to relax a little bit. And again, the detective Ancelotti was like, it was difficult. It's hard having a conversation with somebody that you just completely despise. He said you can't put it into words, having to keep that fake persona up of, oh, you're my buddy. Oh yeah, we're just talking to a normal person, knowing that this guy sitting in your backseat has killed numerous women and you're trying to get answers.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think I mentioned it last week. This one of those car rides is when Detective Ancelotti, he had picked him up. It was the first time he'd picked him up in a while. And he was like, did you miss me? And Cottingham was like, no. And Ancelotti said, don't fucking lie. Don't get moody on me. Like, it was funny kind of watching him play this part. They knew they couldn't push too hard at first, and after 6 years of working with this guy, Ancelotti basically got to know him. He knew when he was pushing too far and he would just shut down. So, I mean, even though he did despise this guy, they did kind of build a relationship and they knew each other. Like, they knew each other's mannerisms and their personalities and when he would start freaking out and shut down, and he started picking up on those cues. And when you work with somebody that long, it's hard not to.
Mm-hmm.
As much as the detective hated it, he knew that all he had to do was pump up Cottingham's ego. Feed it, get him to open up, see what he can get. So they're driving along and they're kind of talking about what they see, and they see like the stadium. They start talking about it, and the detective was like, oh, I bet you haven't even been able to go to the stadium. And he was like, actually, I went to the very first game there. And then they kind of started talking about the pricing and how much it was now. And just, again, just trying to get him to relax and drop that guard down. They noticed new buildings, began talking about how they used to look. And again, just trying to get him comfortable enough to start talking. Every conversation, every word is very calculated by the detectives. Detective Ancelotti then pokes a little. And he just says, hey, is there like a certain case that comes to mind? Like, I'm not talking about we have to talk about it, but like, if there was one case that comes to your mind that I could go pull the case file right now, which one would it be? And Cottingham, he's like, well, there is this one case. I really remember this girl because I watched this TV show in my cell called Roswell. The actress that plays in it, her name is Cherie Appleby, and she reminds me so much because she reminds me of her so much because they look so much alike. He mentioned picking the girl up from a bus stop in Hackensack, and while Cottingham's giving up these little seemingly meaningless details, Ancelotti's in the front seat just typing on his phone. Any details he's saying, he's taken down the actress's name, bus stop, where it was at, just any little bit of information that he could, he's taking it down. Suddenly, Cottingham, after he said a few things, he's like, that's enough for now. I'm not talking about it anymore. So he did start giving information, and then he's like, that's enough. We're not doing it anymore. And Ancelotti knew, you know, I got to pump the brakes or he's just going to completely shut down. So he kind of left it alone. They just kind of talked the rest of the way to the office. But now the detectives are like, all right, we've got these little details. We've got to go look at case files as soon as we get there to see which one he's talking about. So not only are they having to keep this conversation going, like they don't have any information and like they're not chomping at the bit to get to the office to try to find this information, they're also having to talk to this guy the whole way there and keep their excitement's the wrong word. But I mean, they want to solve this case, and they think these are the details we need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So once they make it to the office, the very first thing Ancelotti does is he goes and Googles Cherie Appleby. When he sees her picture, he said that she looked just like one of the victims from the cold case. Her name was Irene Blaze. Irene Blaze was an 18-year-old that was murdered in April of 1969, just 2 years after Nancy Vogel, the one that he's already confessed to. She was found with a stab wound in her back, strangled and raped, and then left in the Saddle River in Bergen County. Ancelotti knew he had to tread lightly because he needed more details that only the killer would be able to know to link Cottingham to it. So, again, he's happened to walk this really tight rope of getting these details, but making sure he's not feeding any details to him. So he goes to Cottingham and he was like, hey, you remember that girl you told me about that looked like Cherie Appleby? And Cottingham was like, hold up. We still have to work out our deal. Like, we're not talking about anything until you give me what I want. So automatically, again, he's being difficult. He already agreed to it. That's why they're bringing him there. They go to start it. And he's like, nope, not doing it right now. Not till you meet my demands.
Mm-hmm.
And Ancelotti, he's just kind of like, yeah, I know. I just want to make sure that what you told me matches what I have in my case file. Like, he's trying to act like nonchalant. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, we're not even doing that right now. We're just talking. And he's like, are there any other details? And Cottingham says, nope, not right now. Again, with the control. Like, it's all on his terms.
Mm-hmm.
Ancelotti went back to Irene Blaze's case file and going over all the information again. And one of the suspects in her case was named Richard Guadagnino. I was going to type out like the phonetic spelling and I didn't. Mm-hmm. I think it's Richard Guadagno or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Guadagno.
I'm not even going to attempt it. Yeah.
Detective Ancelotti's cousin. So the suspect in this girl, or in this girl's case, happened to be Detective Ancelotti's cousin, and he never knew it.
Wow.
Richard was Irene's boyfriend at the time that she went missing. They had been dating about a year. It was a Saturday night. Richard and Irene went out to a club. I guess they kind of got into an argument. They interviewed his cousin during this documentary. And he's like, I don't even remember what the argument was about. He said, it's so trivial now, but it completely changed my life. And I can't even remember what the argument's about right now. But they got into a big argument. He left the club, left her there. He went home. And he didn't talk to her all weekend. He's like, she's pissed off at me. I'm pissed off at her. Like, and it's the 60s. So, I mean, you don't have a cell phone to text each other. You're mad. You stay mad over there for a little while. And once you get over it, you talk. Mm-hmm. Well, he was coming home from work and he got pulled over. And he did have a checkered past, like nothing huge, but I don't even remember if they said what it was, but it wasn't anything major, but he did have a few run-ins with the police. And he's the boyfriend, and he was the last one with her at the club.
Mm-hmm.
Suspect number one.
Yep.
So Irene was found in the river the day after she went missing. Richard hadn't even known that she was missing when they pulled him over. He had no clue. That was the first he even heard of it. So he had no idea she was missing all weekend. So they start questioning him. They're accusing him of murdering her. He's like, the detectives were like, you wanted sex from her and she wouldn't give it to you and you did this. They even showed him the Polaroids of Irene once they pulled her from the river and her body and was like, you did this. And he's like, no, I don't know what happened. And I understand them doing that because they're trying to get a reaction. They're trying to get, but then again, you have these instances where they're completely innocent and mm-hmm. they have to see that and be treated like that. And it just breaks your heart for mm-hmm. the ones that are innocent.
Wow.
Richard, of course, was absolutely devastated. Everybody blamed him. Everybody suspected him. Her mother would not allow Richard to go to the funeral of Irene. And you can tell how badly it affected him through his whole life. So Ancelotti, he keeps pressing for more answers from Cottingham because, again, they need concrete proof that he was involved. Years later, in 2014, they get what they need for Cottingham. From Cottingham when he finally opens up and says, I can tell you what was in her stomach and what her last meal was. I took her out for pizza. And Ancelotti was like, well, do you have any nervous habits? And Cottingham's like, yeah, I pull up my ear. He's like, your ear? And he goes, yeah, my earlobe. You see me do it all the time. I pull up my earlobe. Well, in the case file, there was a witness that seen a guy talking to Irene and he kept pulling at his earlobe while he was talking to her. So there's number two.
Interesting.
They asked if he knew where she was found in Cottingham. He kind of goes back to what are you doing for me? I'm giving you this information. You want more from me. So what are you going to give me for it? And it that just continues for this whole thing. He's like, I already given you too much. I don't want to give you any more. And they just... You can tell Ancelotti was getting frustrated, but he can't lose his cool because then what? So finally, Cottingham officially agrees to go on record and confess. He told them where he seen her. He admitted to following her to the bus stop. He convinces her to go get a drink with him. He took her to the Holiday Inn in Little Ferry, which is also the same location that he abducted Nancy Vogel. They ate a pizza. She wanted to go back home, and he started attacking her, basically.
Wow.
He strangled her with a scarf that she purchased that night and killed her, leaving her body in the river. Like he even said during the documentary, he's like, yeah, it's so despicable. He's like, I pulled over on the side of the road and I pushed her off in the ditch and I heard a splash, but I wasn't going to go down there to make sure she was all the way in. I don't care. And it's just like, this is a human being that you just did this to, and just no ounce of empathy or sympathy or anything. Just, yeah, I did it. So, like, and I don't remember if it was this one, but I noticed when he would start talking about them, there were occasions where he would call them it. I threw it out the car, or I threw it in the road. And it's just like, that is a person. Ugh.
Yeah. What a piece of work.
The detectives asked if he forced her to have sex, and Cottingham said, I didn't force women to have sex. I just told them that we're going to have sex, and that was it. I think that's the definition of forcing somebody.
I think so, yeah.
He would even say he would poke them with a knife, but he wasn't stabbing them. That's stabbing, pretty bro. Much. Like, what do you mean?
Like, how deep does it have to go before it's technically stabbing?
It's ridiculous. He goes, I was just doing it enough to give them a zing to keep them in line. Okay. All right. They finally had the confession they needed with the information only the killer would know. Ancelotti was able to tell Irene's family and his cousin that they were able to get answers. He told them what happened, but again, asked them to keep it quiet because he has 10 more cold cases that he's trying to solve. If it gets out, other families won't get to know. And again, they do interview Richard, the boyfriend of Irene at the time, Ancelotti's cousin. And I guess it was like around, I think he said Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. They were having like a party, and he pulled him to the side and was like, I know who killed Irene. And he's like, well, how do you know? And he goes, the killer confessed to me, and he told him what happened. And Ancelotti said that he just broke down, and he finally opened up about how much it affected him throughout the whole process, you know, losing her and then being accused of it and how it completely changed his life. And now he has answers. So that was kind of cool.
I couldn't imagine being that guy.
Well, Ancelotti immediately begins working on another case. 15-year-old Denise Velasca, last seen walking in Westwood, New Jersey, just a few months after Irene. The morning after Denise went missing, a man was walking his dog and finds her body just a few feet off the side of the road behind a cemetery in Saddlebrook, not far from where Irene was found in the river. So he keeps returning back to the same places because it's familiar to him. It was determined that she had been strangled to death, possibly by the crucifix she was wearing. They asked Cottingham about it, and he goes on to say that he definitely picked up a girl on that road around that time, but I can't remember much of it. He said he would go into what he called the zone, and it was like, it wasn't like him doing it. It was like somebody else doing it. He goes, you know, almost like when you're drunk. No, I don't know. what do you mean? Like, he just, no accountability, none.
Wow.
He again shuts down. I'm not going to discuss anything today. That's it. Well, right after Detective Ancelotti got the confession from Irene Blaze, he was promoted to captain, and he would oversee all operations of the investigation squads. There wasn't like a cold case team. So even though he got promoted, he's still the one working on these cold cases. So he's like, I didn't want to give it up. I didn't want to leave that with somebody and it not get done. Like, it was personal to him. And after working on it for so long, I could see it being personal and you wanting to see it through, make sure it's done. And it had been about 15 years at that point that he's been working with this guy, trying to get more confessions. So he kind of keeps in touch with Cottingham, and they kind of write letters back and forth, but he's not pulling him for these interviews anymore. They're just kind of communicating through mail. So still trying to keep that line of communication open, but nothing like it was before. And I'm sure that hurt Cottingham's ego, because now he's not being doted on.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that Ancelotti was promoted, Cottingham would even write a letter congratulating him. It was almost like Cottingham was attached to Ancelotti. There was one letter that Cottingham wrote, and it said, "I may be a horrible human being, but I'm an honorable one."
What?
What? That kind of contradicts itself a little bit there, buddy. I may be this horrible person, but I'm honorable. Okay. Well, in 2017, Ancelotti was promoted again to chief of detectives. During one conversation Ancelotti was having with Cottingham, they were kind of talking about the promotion and everything, and it was really sweet. Ancelotti, he even got kind of emotional, and he was like, "You know, my grandfather, he was the only one that ever told me, you're going to run this place someday. Like, you're going to become chief. You're going to run this place one day." And, like, Cottingham got, like, "No, he wasn't. He wasn't the only one that said that. I said that to you. I got you here. I did this." And, again, it's just that ego that he has to have. It's crazy. And to see, like, you know, him almost get mad that Ancelotti's not giving him credit for getting him there. And it's like, bro, what are you
doing? That's nuts.
Yeah. Narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Ancelotti even was like, it was really kind of creepy. It was weird. And I could imagine.
Yeah, that's a terrifying human being.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in 2017, 3 years have gone by since he got the last confession, so it's been a little while now. Ancelotti was getting fed up of the games, and he finally told Cottingham, "Let's quit with the bullshit, let's have a real conversation," and Cottingham would confess to the murder of Denise Falasca, finally, the 15-year-old girl.
Wow.
Cottingham began talking more comfortably. He agreed to go on record. He said it occurred right before he got married in May of 1970. He was on his way to work. He saw her walking down the road. He picked her up, and he told her he would take her to her friends because she was walking to meet her friends. He's like, "I'll help you go find them." This pisses me off. And you could tell it really bothered Ancelotti too, because he has three kids. So Ancelotti has three kids while you're doing this, or while he's doing this. And two of them are girls. And he said for what I'm fixing to say, which trigger warning, for child sexual assault, you could tell it affected him so deeply. And he's like, "You know, when they're saying this, I look at my kids and I know this could happen to them." Like, and to hear somebody say these things about a child, he said, "I wanted to spit in his face." And he's like, "But I can't. I have to keep my cool and act like everything's okay while I'm talking to him."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Cottingham picked her up, told her he would take her to go find her friends. He takes her to St. Andrew's School, which is actually where Cottingham went to school. So again, it's an area that he's familiar with. My hands are freezing. Again, there was calmness when he was talking, and he's just talking like telling you what he did last week. Just no emotion. And this is a 15-year-old girl we're talking about.
This guy's crazy.
Scumbag is what he is.
Yeah, seriously.
He says he forces her to give him oral sex. He would then drive her down to Saddlebrook behind the cemetery, and he strangled her in the car and left her on the side of the road. He then went and got something to eat right after. Just went and got a burger.
Wow.
So Ancelotti has now solved three cases that have occurred in a 2-year time frame between October 1967 and July of 1969, a decade before he would be known as the Torso Killer, from mutilating and decapitating the two sex workers. And we are up to a total of 7 murders and the attack on Leslie Odell at this point that they have confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they believe there's been other attacks that have not been reported, but they haven't been reported, so they can't. But they think there's more. they showed him some pictures of some girl, like girls trying to say, like, do you recognize any of these girls? Have you picked any of them up? This is the one that I was thinking about that I'm just, ooh. Cunningham looked at him and he pointed at one of the pictures and said that wasn't the girl that he picked up, but they had the same haircut as her. And he had a nickname for her. And Ancelotti's like, well, what's the nickname? And he goes, Helmet Head. This is a girl you're talking about. A 13-year-old girl you're talking about. And you picked her up and then you nickname her Helmet Head. Like, fuck off. Fuck off.
This dude is a piece of shit.
So the victim was 13-year-old Jacqueline Harp, who had a short haircut. She was a 13-year-old tomboy that went missing after walking home from band practice. She was a flag holder and had to wear like this harness thing to help her hold the flag as she's walking. As she's walking home, she was dragged into an alleyway and attacked and murdered. This happened in 1968, and it wasn't in his normal area that he had been committing crimes in. She is thought to be one of his first murder victims. He was at a diner, and he happened to see her walk by, and the diner was closing. So he said he remembers looking down and that she didn't have socks on, and she was wearing low-cut shoes. When Jacqueline was found, she was wearing moccasins. So there's their link. That's something that only the killer would know. Just 3 months after he confessed to killing Denise, he confesses to killing Jacqueline. He followed Jacqueline in his car up the road. He offered her a ride and she refused and kept walking. He pulled away and unbeknownst to Jacqueline, he basically parked and began following her on foot. He started to try to talk to her and she ignored him. He seen a car coming their way, so he quickly grabbed her and pulled her into the alleyway. He attacked her and then like she began screaming while it's going on and a light flicks on. And so Cunningham panics and he ends up strangling her with the harness that she was wearing at band practice.
Wow.
They went to her family to let her know that he confessed, again asking them to keep it quiet so that they can try to work on these other cases, and the family agreed. Again, they seen the bigger picture. They're like, we'll keep it quiet. We agree. At this point in time, Ancelotti wasn't even telling the local police so that it didn't get out. It was basically just him, the prosecutor, like very only need-to-know basis. Very few people knew. On the 50th anniversary of Jacqueline's murder, there was like a Facebook, like in memory page where people were posting and talking about it. Mm-hmm. And an author of a serial killer book made a post about it and it blew up. Remember the guy that bumped into Richard Cunningham as he was getting off the elevator with the bag of the two heads in it?
Mm-hmm.
This is that author.
Okay.
Peter Voronsky, the same guy that would work he also worked with Cunningham's victim's biological daughter, the one that went to jail and kind of built a relationship with him. Those two were working together with Cunningham to try to get answers and stuff. Well, Richard Cunningham was hoping that this author would write a book about his life. So Cunningham would tell Peter Voronsky that he had confessed to the additional murders to Ancelotti. And of course, Peter began posting about it. Then a local resident finds out and they talk Peter into having like a public meeting on December of 2019. And Peter would announce that Cunningham had confessed to the murders the year before and that the prosecutor office had closed the cases without letting the public know. So, of course, this creates an outrage from the public because they're not seeing the bigger picture. They have no idea what's going on behind scenes. So everybody starts berating Ancelotti. How could you do this? You didn't let us know. Why didn't you let anybody know? And he's like, if I could, I would, but I had these other cases that I'm trying to get answers for. And if I would have done that, I couldn't have brought these families answers.
Wow.
And so some of the public understood. They're like, we understand, you know, do what you got to do. But others, of course, were up in arms and mad at him for it.
That's a crazy predicament to be in.
Well, of course, at this point, Ancelotti's pissed. Because this whole 15 years of working with this guy, he's telling him, I can't tell anything because it'll go to media. It'll go to the media. But then Cottingham goes to a freaking author and asks him to write a book and reports everything. And it gets released to the media anyway. So now he doesn't have that to hold over him.
Mm-hmm.
Ancelotti even said he almost took it like a betrayal. Like basically told him, like, this is on you. You did this. You released this to the media. It has nothing to do with me. I kept up my end of the bargain. Well, that, of course, kind of created a little animosity there. So we're going to fast forward to 2020. Of course, the pandemic happens. And with that, again, that changes everything. Ancelotti can't go interview him in person. He can't bring him to the county jail. Like, they're kind of communicating through letters and not really in person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In March of 2021, Ancelotti decides it's time to retire. Starting May 1st, after 30 years in law enforcement, he knew there was one thing that he really wanted to do before he left. He knew that he could use his retirement as leverage over Cottingham as a one last ditch effort to close more cases. So he goes to Cottingham and they start talking. And Cottingham's bragging about, you know, I'm the perfect murderer. He said, you know, it's just a game to him. It was the thrill of being able to stalk these women and murder them, get away with it time and time again. Cops were stupid. They think they have all the answers to everything. And Ancelotti's like, okay, I'll buy it. Like, convince me. Convince me that you are so smart back in the day and how you didn't get caught. He says, I can give you a murder that even confused the medical examiner. And he said, I can tell you how they were murdered, but you won't believe me because that's not what's on the death certificate. And he said, well, they were drowned. They were left outside in the heat for a few days, and so the medical examiner didn't find water in their lungs. It's the perfect murder. Smart Richard Cottingham didn't realize is he kept saying they and murders, plural. There was only one case where two girls were found together. So he just gave up what case he's talking about by trying to be so smart.
Wow.
So they go to that case, they pull the case file of the two girls, and they go to the medical examiner, and they're like, could this be true? Could it really look like they were smothered and they really be drowned? And he said, yes, they both had what we thought was congestion in their lungs, but because they had been left outside in the heat, the water evaporated, so they couldn't tell that they were drowned. So again, like I said, Cottingham doesn't realize that he kept using the plural form when referring to the murder. And what do you know? There is only one double homicide in Ancelotti's cold case files. Two teenage girls, Marianne Pryor and Lorraine Marie Kelly, had been found naked, laying face down, sexually assaulted in a wooded area in August of 1974. Ropes had been found around their necks. They were 16 and 17 years old. They were both best friends. They had made plans to go shopping for swimsuits, but never returned home. They were able to link Cottingham to the murder. So they go back to Cottingham. They said, okay, lay it out. What happened? Cottingham says, nope, not going to tell you anything else. That's it. And they're like, you already fucked up. Like, you already told us this. We know it's you. Just go ahead and tell us what happened. And again, Ancelotti could no longer make the deal that he would keep everything out of the media, so he only had that one other option.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to use his retirement as a bargaining tool. So April 14th, 2021, Ancelotti tells Cottingham that he's retiring. Cottingham tried to talk him out of it. Like, why are you retiring now? You don't need to retire now. What do you mean you're retiring now? Like, almost freaking out. And Ancelotti's like, no, I've done a good job. I'm on a high. I'm doing great. I want to leave on a high. I'm done. No more you and me. We're done. Oh, he says, there's just one thing left that I would like to do before I retire. I'm asking you to confess to the murders of Marion Pryor and Lorraine Marie Kelly. Cunningham says, only if I won't be taken to trial. Ancelotti says, well, that's the agreement. We've already had this agreement. All you got to do is talk. Like, why are you wasting my time? So Cunningham goes on to say he was headed to work. He sees the two girls hitchhiking. He picks them up, promising to take them to the mall. Well, that day it was pouring rain. So they kind of hesitated and were sitting in the car, almost, I guess, waiting for the rain to pass over so that they could go in the mall. And Cunningham blames the girls for it. He's like, if they would have just gotten out of my car, they would have been fine. But because they hesitated, I decided they were mine. So again, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. It's the girls' fault because they were sitting in my car. He drove them to a hotel and he kept Lorraine in a headlock as he's driving down the road and telling Marianne, like, you sit there and be quiet or she's done for. Cunningham claims to have taken them to the hotel room, watched TV with them for a while. And he's like, we were just watching TV, cracking jokes, laughing. And Ancelotti's like, there's no freaking way. You did not take these two girls to a hotel and y'all are just joking around and laughing and everything's good. Like, there's no freaking way. They ended up having cigarette burns all over their bodies. And when Ancelotti asked him about that, he said, I don't remember doing that. Of course you don't. The girls' families reported them as missing, but of course, because of the times, the cops said they were runaways, so they didn't really take it seriously. Cunningham said that when he was ready to go to sleep, he would hogtie them together so that they couldn't get away. But they're just chilling and relaxing in the TV, joking around, watching TV and joking around. He kept them captive for 2 nights in that hotel. The second day, Cunningham would fill the hotel bathtub with water. He tied Lorraine's hands behind her, put her face down in the tub, and sat on top of her, while the other friend, Marianne, was sitting in the room listening to all of this happen and cannot get away. Listening to him murder her best friend, she's sitting there, knowing she's next.
That's crazy.
He then would do the same to Marianne. He would then leave their bodies in the woods just outside the hotel. Ancelotti again used his retirement to convince Cunningham to go to court for the murder of the girls. He told Cunningham if he went to trial for the murder, then he would continue their relationship even after he retired. So he pulled a fast one. He got the confession and he's like, but if you go to trial, I'll keep talking to you. Played it. Cunningham.
This is an insane case.
Cunningham agrees.
Wow.
So due to COVID, it was done virtually, but he did go to court. He was sentenced to 2 more life sentences. Nearly 20 years of work with Cunningham came to an end. 2 days after the trial, Ancelotti retired. So, with the 2 more cases solved, that was a total of 6 cold cases that he was able to bring justice for the families. Of course, leaving 6 more unsolved. Ancelotti wasn't done yet. Even though you're retired, he's like, I'm not done. He stayed true to his word and he continued to communicate with Cunningham. He got permission to stay involved and trying to solve the other cases. And so he had this case stuck in his head. He's like, I think I can solve this one. 18-year-old Marianne Della Sala left work at a local grocery store in Hackensack. She was found 11 weeks later floating in the river. At first, they could not determine her cause of death. At first, they wondered, you know, did she take her own life from jumping from the bridge? Like, they couldn't figure it out. Her family, though, was like, there's no way. There's no way she would have taken her own life. Well, they found Marianne's diary, and in the diary, she wrote about a white male that had been stalking her at work, and he drove a Chevy. Cunningham had also mentioned to Ancelotti that there was a girl that was found in the river that he might have been responsible for. So he's like, I think I can link this one. I just got to work at it. This means that Marianne could have been his first victim, is what Ancelotti's thinking. He's like, I think this could be the first one. It's a lot different. It does not quite the same MO. Cottingham's health suddenly takes a turn. Ancelotti ended up visiting him. They ended up transferring him to another jail that was like a long-term infirmary that they were keeping at because his health was so bad. And Ancelotti's like, he's on his deathbed. I'm going to go see what I can do. So he goes to visit Cottingham. They're kind of talking about, you know, what bad shape he's in. Cottingham's telling him, like, what's wrong with him. He even says, like, yeah, the doctor says I have a weak heart. And Ancelotti goes, well, some would say you have no heart. So it's just, it's so funny because he is so sassy with him at the same time that he's trying to, like, feed his ego. But he, like, he still gets those zingers in there every now and then. They continue talking about his health, and Ancelotti's like, yeah, I hate that for you, but listen, you told me about this girl at a grocery store. He's just like, I mean, he's just going in, like, he don't care. Even Cottingham kind of laughs, and he's like, you just don't give up, do you? And they kind of go back and forth a couple of times, and of course, Cottingham's like, well, what are you going to do for me? So here we go again with the freaking cat and mouse game. But Ancelotti, finally, he's like, there is no more for you. You are on your deathbed. Why are you taking this to the grave with you? Like, just admit it. Just admit to what you did. So what happened? Cottingham was 21 years old, working at that Blue Cross Blue Shield office with Rodney Alcala. And he would come into the shopping center and he's like, I'd flirt with her and she'd flirt with me. And it's like, obviously not if she wrote in the diary that you were stalking her. That's not flirting. The day she would disappear, her dad would even, this broke my heart, her dad had stopped at the store that day asking if she needed a ride. She said it was a nice day and that she would just walk home that day.
Wow.
When she left that night, Cottingham followed her home. He would end up picking her up, and he claims that they were together for about 5 to 6 hours. He would smother her and take her under the bridge and placed her body on a pallet. Ancelotti told him that he felt like that was good enough for, like, a confession. And he's like, can we go on record? Can I go ahead and record you on my phone so that we can, they, because there's certain requirements for this exceptional clearance, and they basically have to have it coming from his mouth if he's still alive. But Cottingham's like, no, I'm not going to say it again, like, I'm not doing it. And what he didn't know is it doesn't matter how you record them when it's for clear exceptional clearance. It doesn't matter how they record them as long as they record them. What Cottingham didn't know is he was recording him on the phone the entire time. Mm-hmm. He got the confession anyways. He didn't have to agree.
Wow.
And so with getting that confession, that would make number 7 that was completed.
So I guess now that he's not an actual detective, he's using the dirty tactic.
he's like, I'll get it any way I can. Well, what's crazy, is while he was there visiting him for that, I'll get there for more. We're fixing to get there. I'm kind of getting ahead a little bit. But while he was visiting him, he's like, yeah, well, I know I just, like, confessed to this. He said, they think they have me on other cases with DNA. And Ancelotti's like, well, have you confessed? And he's like, no. And he's like, well, they have your DNA. Like, why don't you just tell them what happened? Because I don't want to. He's like, bro, they have your DNA. Like, just make it easy on everybody and get it over with. And he's like, no, I don't want to. It's just insane. Well, during that visit, Cottingham said that he believes he is about 17 years old when he first killed somebody. Still in high school, 17 years old. He said, I believe that's about the age I was the first time I killed somebody. They said, what happened? And he goes, it was just necessary. Wouldn't tell him who, what, anything. Just isn't necessary.
Wow.
He also said, would go on to say that there were other states that he had killed in. Then in June 2022, 2 months later, another cold case is solved using DNA, the one that he was talking about. Diana Cusick was found strangled in February of 1968. He also confessed to the murders of Mary Beth Hines, Laverne Moy, Sheila Hyman, and Maria Emerito Rosado Nieves. It's still unknown how many victims have died at his hands. He has confessed to an additional murder in January of 2026. So just this month.
Wow.
Her name was Alice Jean Eberhardt, a young nursing student, bringing the total number up to 18.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So, as we close the chapter on Richard Cunningham, it's important to pause and remember the women and the girls whose lives were stolen and whose names too often go unheard. They were more than victims. They were daughters, sisters, friends, and loved ones, and they deserved long, full lives. We also want to honor the tireless dedication of Detective Anzalotti, whose relentless pursuit of the truth brought long overdue answers and a measure of justice to families who had been waiting decades for closure. His work stands as a powerful reminder that even cold cases are never truly forgotten. This was a heavy case, very heavy case, and I am so glad to be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was dark. It was hard to listen to him. And it's hard to believe that a case this horrific isn't more known. But telling these stories, remembering their names, acknowledging those who fought for justice is how we ensure that they're not erased.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I do want to list all of the women whose lives were taken too early and unjustly by Richard Rottingham. Because he's a bitch. And let their names be remembered. So, I am going to go in chronological order. Alice Jean Eberhardt, age 18, was killed in 1965. Mary Ann Della Sala, 17 years old, 1967. Nancy Vogel, 29 years old, 1967. Diane Cusick, 23 years old, 1968. Jacqueline Jackie Harper, 13 years old, 1968. Irene Blaze, 18 years old, 1969. Denise Falaska, 15 years old, 1969. Mary Beth Hines, 21 years old, 1972. Laverne Moy, 23 years old, 1972. Sheila Hyman, 33 years old, 1973. Marie Emerita Rosada Nieves, 18 years old, 1973. Lorene Marie Kelly and Mary Ann Pryor, 16 and 17 years old, 1974. Mary Ann Carr, 26 years old, 1977. Dita Gudarzi, 22 years old, 1979. Unidentified Jane Doe that was found with Dita, estimated to be 16 years old. Valerie Ann Street, 19 years old, 1980. Jean Rayner, 25 years old, 1980. So you can just kind of see, I mean, multiple a year, and they estimate that the number, you know, he's confessed and has been proven for 18 of them. They said it could be closer to 80 to 100 women that he has killed.
That is insane.
Yeah. Yep. And like I said, he confessed to this most recent one in January of this year. So hopefully more names will come so that families can have answers. It's still ongoing.
Yeah. This was a super heavy case.
Very heavy. But like I said, I think a lot of cops do get bad raps because some of them don't do their job or don't do what they need to. But then you hear stories like this to where they just go above and beyond. And mm-hmm. it's like, you are an awesome human being.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. And to see, he talked about, you know, balancing work and family and his kids and trying to get answers. And he almost became obsessed with it. And I'm glad it paid off and he was able to get answers for all these families. It's pretty neat.
I thought so.
So, yeah. That is Richard Rottingham. Richard Cunningham, a.k.a. Rottingham. Yeah, you want to give him a cool nickname like the Torso Killer.
Well, I mean,
he's just Rottingham,
I suppose.
Yeah, that's a heavy one, guys.
Yeah, that was something else.
That was rough. That's probably really why Tori didn't want to. She's like, y'all are gonna go get sad in there.
She had enough of it.
It's cold in there.
It's actually not that bad now.
Yeah.
Seemed like it might have warmed up a little bit now that we've been in here.
Yep. Well, I guess I need to start looking at the next one. I'm going to try to do a not so heavy one. I've got a book that I'm waiting on for one that I'm very interested in. It may end up being a heavy one. I know the topic is kind of heavy, but what they did is kind of badass. I think it's a history / true crime. So I'm excited about that one. I've got another one that I'm kind of working on. We didn't go to Edgar Allan Poe, so we don't have anything cool about that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Got Iced Out. But we do have that one coming up in March, so that'll be cool. That's all I got.
Yeah, I don't really have anything either.
Just brought you down real low, didn't I?
You did.
Well, I guess we can go watch Will Trent.
I suppose.
Guys, if you have
so
not...
So far ahead of me.
I know, but if you have not watched Will Trent yet, go watch it. I know I've recommended the books on here by Karen Slaughter before, and I've loved those books. And I was just scrolling through TikTok one day, and it was like, make sure to get caught up on Will Trent before the new season. And I was like, that's the detective I read about. And I got to looking, and they made the books into a TV series. And I got Josh hooked on it. I got Tori and AD hooked on it. We've been watching it for the last 2 days. It is so good. So if you're looking for a good show that's true crime, but drama and funny, it's really good. Go check it out. Will Trent, 100%.
Yep, not bad.
Yep. All right, well, let's go wake Tori up. Go watch Will Trent. Until next week, stay spooky.
And I don't know what to say.
There's nothing to say after that. It's too dark.
No, I have nothing funny after this one. This one was too much.
Yeah. Stay spooky. Stay safe. Stay warm. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.